Most of them are imaginary. We have them all the time that come in that have been badly hurt by somebody. Sometimes these hurts are pretty real. A woman whose husband has been taken away from her by another woman has a tendency to have a grudge. And you can't very well blame her. But the answer to the matter is that having worked the grudge over a little bit, the thing is, forget it. It's not going to do a bit of good. Let these other persons go as they will. The person who holds the grudge is the one that's going to get sick. So all attitudes that destroy health are unfortunate. Regardless of cause, regardless of justification, what makes you sick is not good for you. And nearly all animosities and antagonisms lead to destructive circumstances. The individual seems to draw more of the same, especially if they become involved in a morbid acidity over the issues. What has to be is that no matter what happens, we must separate in peace. We must give up all this idea of hoping something terrible is going to happen to someone else because they deserve it for what they did to us. This attitude is absolutely wrong and will damage the person who holds it. Now, we can say all this sounds like moralization. That doesn't mean too much because people can hold grudges and do. They can be jealous and are. They can be neurotic and will be for time to come. Therefore, there is no reason to assume that these vital factors are important to the individual himself. The answer is they are. The answer is that they shorten physical life, destroy health, interfere with careers, alienate relatives, disillusion their children, and lead to all kinds of mistaken relationships in life based upon desperation or exasperation. Therefore, they're just no good. No one can afford to hate anything. We may not believe in some things. We may wish they were different. We may do everything we can possibly do to change them. But just blank hatred against something we do nothing about is a very dangerous emotion. We must try to put principles ahead of hatreds. If a person performs an act that is outside a principle, that isn't the right kind of act, that isn't honest or honorable, we have the right to disapprove. But by disapproving, we have only the right to affirm our attitude and, if necessary, relinquish the association. We cannot carry the grudge. We cannot try to solve some of these problems for other people. Another interesting factor comes in the practitioner. The practitioner usually is a person with considerable experience in handling human problems. The practitioner, however, is also an individual. The practitioner, no doubt, has had their own life problems. They also may have come from the same endangered background that the client came from. They may have the same problems, but the practitioner also has his or her own attitude towards things, has her own conviction about realities and illusions, and probably has a little formula as to how to get people out of their troubles. So as this comes along, the client must realize that the practitioner cannot solve the issues of another person. A practitioner cannot tell you how to live, or who to like, or why to dislike, or why you're lonely. The practitioner can only advise you as to what to do with your problem. The practitioner who tries to give you a decision, it takes the right way from your right to make your own mistakes, and you will have to. But the practitioner can point out that you have this mistake, and it's up to you to do something about it. The practitioner may also then be able to go through the assets of your personality to find out your skills, your abilities, your dedications, your interests, your hobbies, your avocations, and find out things that might be of value and remind you of them. But the practitioner cannot solve your problem. The most that anyone can do is to help you to have the courage, the strength, and the integrity to solve the problem yourself. This is why the clergy, more or less, has dominated this field. It is because the clergy throws everything to the Lord. And the Lord, in this case, operating upon the sufferer, must operate through the disposition of the patient. Therefore, in prayer, meditation, in honest exhibition of mistake, through all the various contrivances by which the person is caused to face themselves as a religious duty, these things can help. They can also overdo situations and cause further pressures. But generally speaking, anything that causes the person to realize his own responsibility for his condition is constructive. It helps to solve. Now, most people have never had a good analysis of capacities and potentials. Very few people are really aware of what they could accomplish if they put their efforts into a constructive pattern. Some have had some experience. Some have had secret hopes and desires that they would be able to do certain things in the course of their lives. All of these things can add up to a very valuable and important change in policy of living. The individual who is alone too much should seek associations outside of himself, not to convert them or not to do what they do, but to share openly and freely the experiences of each other in an effort to find greater values and greater depths of understanding. All these things finally add up to the fact that sit down quietly by yourself and say, how do I feel? And if the answer is that you feel terrible, then the time has come to find out why. If you say to yourself, I wish I was dead, you don't mean that. In most cases, you wish somebody else was dead. But in any case, the discouragement, the frustration, the fact that life isn't worth living, and that the faculty of memory is fading because we never used it correctly, these things are depressing. And as life takes away the edge of the energies of youth, we sort of sink into a solace of our own, which is far from constructive. So wherever there is a problem, and if you can look around and do not see a world in which there are good things happening, you're in trouble. Now, in this particular emergency that we're in the world today, it's becoming more and more common for people to develop strong neurotic tendencies. Nearly everyone is against something in these times. Nearly everyone feels that they have been personally hurt or personally offended, that dreams that they have hoped for have been broken and discarded, that the world is in bad trouble and there is really nothing to do to make one particularly happy about anything. Well, this is the first fundamental principle. But is it true? Some people would like to think it's true, but a clinical physician might differ from them. We may also say that in 1986, we perhaps had one of the most important years we've ever known. We are gradually wearing out the inevitable consequences of error. We are coming face to face with the fact that we cannot break the rules. And one by one, as we try to break them, these rules have a tendency to break us. Little by little, it is gradually appearing more and more obviously that things have to change. And things have to change constructively. And the old selfishness has got to die because we can't afford it any longer. We might have tried to do things before, but there was new land to take over and was always possible to have a successful career. Now we begin to wonder, we begin to estimate what the next 50 years is going to mean in populations, in natural resources, in pollution, and all these things. And suddenly we are beginning to see in the world the types of disorders that are inside of ourselves, but we haven't recognized them. We were just unhappy because we didn't feel good. Well, people don't feel bad just because they feel bad. There's a reason of some kind. They have broken a rule. They have overlooked something that was necessary. They have done something that was not necessary. So today, the pressure of society is like the neuroses of the individuals. We are suddenly discovering a world of neurotics, a world in which nearly everyone is afraid to live. Nearly everyone doesn't know what to do next. Now, this sounds like a terrible mess, and it is. But in the universal plan of things, there is always a reason. That reason is right. And the end of that reason is that we will make the adjustments necessary to meet universal law. In our excitement, we have forgotten that we live in a universe of cause and effects. When we remember that and keep the rules, we will be very much better off, and we will discover that all the suffering we have gone through has been well repaid by the fact that we finally found a solution to the mistakes of humanity. Now, this same type of thing is what's happening inside of people. The world's dilemma is reacting into the personal life of the individual. The world is in trouble because of the way it acts. The private individual is in trouble because of the way they act. They are part of something which cannot win. They are part and parcel of a great competitive system that cannot succeed. And in all of it, in all of its branches, in all of its parts and departments, we have overlooked the basic principle of humanity. Love ye one another. Now, it's going to keep on getting rough until we find that out. But when we find that out, accept it and live it, then we are beginning to grow. We are maturing. We are gaining an insight that we could never have had we not had to earn the right to be better people. So it's the same with the individual. When he gets tired of suffering, he'll do things to stop it. But while he is still content to struggle along the best he can, he will make the same old mistakes and fall back on alcohol and narcotics. So it's a problem of getting hold of the facts. Each person has the right to be a constructive individual, regardless of the world in which they live. No one can be destroyed by a mass psychosis, even if it is dynamic and pressing. We have to surrender to negative things, or we remain positive. So in our problem with people, the people are involved because of the community problems. The community problems are there because of the people. We are here in the mess we're in because we are selfish and haven't prevented a mess. And when it came along, we tried to keep it going. We tried to build good, substantial homes over vacant lots. And you can't do it. So all through the way of life, we are being taught. And we are here to be taught. We are here to make the same mistakes until we stop making them. We are here to gradually learn the great lesson that when we keep the rules, they will keep us. We are here because we are here to grow as citizens of an eternity, and that these citizens have got to grow up. We are vaguely but forcibly not maturing properly. So it's very important to every person to clean house, to get rid of all the negative excuses for not being able to do what they should do. Get over the idea that we are privileged to cause suffering because we have suffered. This is not the answer. We have the privilege to cease to suffer, because we have found that that is the way of peace for all concerned. So all the way along, we have this problem of allowing the past as history to dominate us. There's always been war, so there always will be war. This is not the way of life. Or way of dishonesty in government. There's always been corruption. There have always been dictators. The history of the world is a mass of mistakes, made intentionally or accidentally, and every civilization of the past has risen and fallen. This is also in our personal lives. People of all ages have made their mistakes. Little by little, however, all of these groups have grown in some way. We are the past. We are all that has gone before. We have gained along the way. And the number of thoughtful, well-intentioned, and dedicated persons is increasing all the time. We are here because we need more growth. We need another course. We need to get a higher degree of education than we've ever had before. And that is possible only because we have a greater need than we ever have before. And due to our own evolution, we have a greater insight about this need than we ever had before. All of us are going along all right if we take hold of ourselves and get rid of the negative pressures that allow us to accept that which is not right. We do not have to suffer because some people think it's inevitable. If we do suffer for one reason or another, it surely should produce some constructive consequence. Suffering might be like a term in prison. And the trouble now is, as soon as the prisoner is out, he does it again. As soon as our pain stops, we do it again. We do not learn the lessons. And because we don't learn the lessons, we still have them. I think, therefore, that out of most people who have counseled, most scientists who have been in psychiatric or psychological professionals' work, the whole fact is definitely that here come these people. They stand upright. They look pretty good. They have fair abilities. Many of them have graduated from good schools. Most of them have jobs. Many of them have families. And they are all a wonderful bunch of potentials. They could do great things. And nearly every one of them is hung up on something. There's something they can't handle. There's something they don't know what to do about. And actually, if a person who doesn't know what to do about it went to a professional and said, "I don't know what to do about it," the professionals would probably say to him, "Well, how do you think you ought to handle it?" And then the person would tell the same answer that the professor will have to tell him. He knows. He knows what he's doing. But he wants to forget it because it interferes with some sense of fulfillment that he wants to nurse. We have that same problem in all the fields of life today. Our entertainment field is cluttered with this type of thing. Entertainment simply because we feel like it. Social crime is rampant simply because we do what we want to do. And then we wonder why we're in trouble. You can't break the rules and not suffer. And whether it's a family with three or four members or world, you've got to keep the rules. And those who keep the rules find something out of it that is really tremendous. They discover, for one thing, that they can be right without all the rest of the world being right also. There is no evidence that all people are going to come to a similar discovery at the same time. Each finds it for himself when he allows it to happen inside of himself. The answers to everything that we are seeking, really, lie within us. They lie within the soul of the human being. They lie within the divine factor at the base of all human life. Inside, we know what is right. But with the mind and the emotions and the body, we fight against it. We want to gratify the emotions, we want to gratify the appetites of the body, and we want to fulfill the ambitions of the mind, and that divine factor which is within us is neglected, denied, and ignored. Therefore, if you want to get over any kind of negative attitude, it's in you to do it. There is something in you that will heal any ill that is caused by the mind. But it's something that you have to work with. You have to determine to do it. you have to put the common good and your own survival in front of the negative attitudes which you have been inclined to hold. I know one individual who said they just couldn't get over temper fits. So what did they do? They went on tranquilizers. They took all kinds of pills to cure temper fits, which, of course, is a bit of idiocy in itself. They're just trying to drug themselves out of a bad disposition. So every once in a while, however, they had to come up for air. And when they did, the disposition was still there. And finally, they became interested in a religious approach to the problem. And they were told definitely that prayer and meditation would probably help. So they tried it, and it did help. And they gave God the credit, but it was the God in themselves that did the job. It had a chance. The higher part of ourselves had a chance to accomplish the natural good. And this chance had been delayed for years for the tranquilizers. But until the other attitude was available, there was nothing else to be done. So the answer to all these things is that health, mental and emotional health, does depend upon keeping the rules. Keeping them in every sense of the word. To keep them means to obey nature. And nature is the most amazing cooperating creature that ever existed. Do you realize that nature is a term we apply to a conglomerate of universes, of cosmic systems, including everything you can think of, from bugs to angels? It contains all the infinite confusion, so-called, of life. Stars, meteors, comets, everything you can think of. And yet nature is in perfect order. Nature handles the whole problem quietly and simply, and there are very, very few mistakes made along the way. It is because nature is depending upon universal law to support it. Nature is keeping the rules by which nature itself was brought into existence and by which it must continue to the end of time. So that all of us can do the same thing. And around this season of the year is an awfully good time to start some of these maneuvers to see what can be done about things. How about dropping a card or two to somebody whom you haven't written to or spoken to for 10 years? Or make it 5 years. We're not going to be cruel on this matter. But somebody that you have ignored because you resent them. They may turn around and send you a resentment card in return. And they might tell you they don't want to hear from you again. But that will be them telling you. That is their business. What you're telling them is your business. If you have made the proper move, you have fulfilled the need. If you have done it honestly, with a sincere desire to heal a dissent or a discord, you have achieved the purpose for which you have been intended, namely, to bring peace to the world. If others don't accept it, you are not responsible. But you'd be surprised how many will accept it if it is done with a good spirit. Also, we can try to look through the confusion of the moment. Is the job too heavy and too big? Are responsibilities more than you can handle? Are the costs of living outrageous as far as you are concerned? If there are all problems that are disturbing your inner life, try to solve them. Try to solve the problems of limited funds by limiting extravagances that which you might think are necessary. The simpler the life, the nearer to the truth it is. And too many possessions are the basis of more trouble than any joy they've ever brought. In the same way, looking at the world, try to see the great plan behind things, the plan of the ultimate recognition of the universal brotherhood of humanity and fatherhood of deity. Try to recognize a great and benevolent plan personal or impersonal, however you feel about it, a great plan that says all things must work together for good. Evil cannot survive. If you have two good deeds and put them side by side, they coalesce and support each other. Put two evil deeds side by side, and they destroy each other. Therefore, evil cannot win. Evil cannot end the great divine plan. It has to succeed. And any individual who stands in the way of that success will suffer a little. So better get out of the way of progress and into harmony with it. And try to end forever and ever any negative attitudes in yourself. Try to increase your own inner potential. If you have at leisure, study, work with it, serve various community sources and causes, and be sure that you have a daily life that is as useful, constructive, and kind as you can possibly make it. This is the way that will ultimately bring you internal peace. It will also prepare you to be part of a great evolving way of existence, which is based on the inevitable victory of good, the inevitable victory of love over hate, of truth over error, wisdom over ignorance. These things together are the end. And we are fortunate, probably, in 1986-7, that this condition is as intense as it is. We are reaching the point where we cannot throw it away. We cannot any longer turn away from it or close our eyes to it. And when an ailment reaches that degree, there's only one answer. You've got to cure it. And this is the same thing that happens with a patient seeking a physician or a psychiatrist. They seldom go until the situation is very far advanced. But when there is nothing left to do except grow or perish, nature says you can't perish, so you might as well start growing. There's no way out of growth. It is inevitable. Nothing that ever existed can avoid it or evade it. In some cases, however, it is slow to come and painful. And this is because we have opposed it and failed to develop the potentials within ourselves which justify us in expecting a good and happy life. I think most of us are working on plans for self-improvement and seeking ways to serve others in their needs will find already that these dedications have become precious interludes in their lives. That helping people is a beautiful job if you do it right. If you try to live for them, it is a difficult and impossible job. But if you can inspire people to correct themselves, to reestablish their hopes, to find again the wisdom and strength of a relationship with infinity, if we can help forlorn people to realize that their loneliness is not necessary, that their loneliness is not intended. We are all intended to be busy, busy living, busy doing, busy growing. These are the things that we should be concerned with. If we have lost those who are close to us, even this we must carry with dignity. For all these things happen and always have. But never in any of these happenings is God cruel. All things work together for the greater good. And every problem that we have is a unit of growth in disguise. So if we keep that kind of attitude and work with it, I think maybe next year can be a pretty good year for a lot of people. I think it's going to be a much better year for a great many nations also, because we're gradually waking up. We're gradually becoming aware of things. We are gradually outgrowing the belief, the false belief, that our existence here is just a small span of years that we should make as comfortable as possible. Actually, our existence here, is a short span here to make possible an eternal growth. or to contribute to an infinite unfoldment of our life potential throughout time and space. We are bound to grow, and the only thing we can do is slow it down by self-pity, jealousy, hatreds, and all this type of thing. These are the mistakes which, if we continue to make them, can damage us seriously, but cannot destroy us. We can be tortured by our own mistakes, but we cannot die from them. In due course of time, the truth in ourselves is resurrected and takes control over the personality, and we are once more the children of the infinite that we are in substance, whether we know it or not. So in this season, when we're all thinking about trying to be as nice and wonderful as we can, let's try very hard to say that we can just wipe out forever any unpleasant or unhappy thought against any person. This is not an easy thing, perhaps, but it's easier than you realize. The reason it is difficult is because so many people have built a mistaken life upon that excuse. They have insisted that this other person or persons has damaged them. They're not unhappy because this person exists, but they've been the cause of all kinds of misfortunes down through the years. This is not true. The individual has caused maybe the original incident. The individual who was hurt has repeated it, multiplied it, and exaggerated it until in turn it damaged the life. If we do not hold these negative thoughts, they can't damage. And if they are damaging, get over it and carry into the future only the growth, wisdom, love, friendship, and understanding that you have brought to fruition within yourselves. We are all growing, and with the grace of God and with an insight into the requirements of natural law and a willingness to work together in the cause of good, the ends we seek will come in the fullness of time. Well, I think that's probably it. I'd like to make an announcement. My wife's book, Mrs. Hall's book, an outline of four books determining and summarizing the birth of a new age. This is just in from the printer. Many of you are interested in her work, and this is a summary in four brief sections of her entire project. So you can secure it from our book table if you're interested. And thank you for being with us this morning.